Welcome to Bangor, Maine.
Bangor, Maine.
And winter is still with us, but we're just discussing the nature of winter blues, that melancholy sense of gray, dreary, is this winter ever going to end? I'm tired of being cold and rain. How do I actually look at modernizing blues? Because Jamie and I are going to talk today about blues. Brews. We're going to play some brews. And as you may or not have been noticing, Jamie is exploring the harmonic implications of chromatic blues.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
That's what he was doing.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
He was exploring. We're here and, you know, talking about all sorts of different topics, all sorts of different subjects. And, you know, stylistic purism, this idea that one style over another is what people focus on. I mean, you know, if you think of it, it's almost like a religious calling. Like, it's like not really different than being a Protestant or a Buddhist. You know, it's like I'm a blues musician. I strongly identify myself with a specific sequence of harmonic foundation and sounds. And I will do certain things within that that say the same sort of sentences over and over again. And there's a heritage of that that comes from sort of the church and gospel music of the Deep South blues. There's a history. Just like jazz has a foundation in that, but it goes into more deep harmonic exploration. Fusion takes that another step forward, rhythmically and melodically. But blues is a faction, an ideal, a state of vernacular. You know, like if I were to go into a heavy metal rock band and only play blues stylistically, it wouldn't fit because the two vernaculars don't speak. The two languages don't speak exactly. There are similarities and, you know, commonalities like Portuguese and Spanish, but it's not really the same language, right? I mean, would you agree with me so far?
Yeah.
Am I setting a premise?
Yeah.
You're nodding awfully in silence. I'm just kind of,
are you
nodding
off? I'm just letting you go, man. I'm just
blues.
You like hearing yourself talk, so I'm letting you go.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. Passing the torch to my dear friend and saying, you know, my speciality is I play in blues environments. You know, you play in a lot more varied styles of music than I do. So I've thought about this, but you know, really, I mean, blues, what do you think? I mean, is blues evolving or is it stuck or is it actually?
I don't know. I mean, I kind of have to like almost recuse myself from some of this conversation because I don't fancy myself. Can't believe I just said that. I don't consider myself to be like a, you know, I'm a blues player. I'm a blues man, you know, because.
Well, is that even real?
I think it is. I think in the case of someone like, you know, Freddie King or Albert King or someone like, or Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Albert Collins.
These people were blues players. These were bluesmen, you know.
They spoke blues.
Well, they were kind of, they were sort of almost born into it. You know, like that's what they started doing from day one. That was what they set out to do. That's where their interest lied. You know, I'm a guy from, I'm from San Diego, California. You know, I played a lot of different styles of music. I'm into a lot of different styles of music. I didn't, you know, I mean, I listened to blues-based music, but I didn't spend, you know, a good chunk of my time and upbringing, you know, like delving really, really, really deep into the blues, into one particular style. Even and sussing out all those players, like the guy that keeps popping in my mind as I'm saying this is a guy like Kirk Fletcher,
mm-hmm.
who to me is a blues player.
Mm-hmm.
He can play other stuff,
mm-hmm.
but he's a legit blues player.
Mm-hmm.
Like he knows, you know, he knows all the
repertoire.
Yeah, the deep cuts, guys that you've never heard of. You know, like he's for real. You know,
he's digested the vernacular.
And I'm not that guy. I can certainly get up on stage in a blues setting and play blues, but where I'm coming from is a different place, and where like a Kirk Fletcher is coming from. So for me to say, well, I'm a blues man, that would be, or even be someone that purports to be able to speak as an authority on the subject, for me, will be kind of fraudulent, I think.
But is it necessary to be a bluesman? Like, it's like interesting, you know, like I look at the thing, like Derek Trucks has a very big Indian influence. You know, when you listen to his playing on slide, he's got this almost vocal quality to what he's doing, but he's got the historical pedigree. He's got the, you know, the background of playing, you know, traditional blues, but he's taking it another step forward. Yeah. Robin Ford by no means is a traditional blues player, but he came up with Jimmy Witherspoon, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he came up in that pedigree. You know, there's guys like John Mayer who've basically digested Stevie Ray and BB and want to, you know, basically regurgitate that stuff.
Yeah. To me, like someone like that is sort of I look at someone like a John Mayer, and again, I don't totally dislike John Mayer. And I know that in past shows, it sounds like I'm kind of, you know, giving the guy some shit, but you know, I mean, I just tend to be, and I don't really know a lot of his background, so it's a little unfair, but on the surface, I tend to view someone like that as more like a third or fourth generation blues player, not in that
he's not a direct lineage.
Yeah, in that he's kind of like copped the guys that copped the guys. You know,
but you
I mean?
Know that in the blues community, he's been like touted like by BB and by Eric Clapton as the torch holder for the next generation.
It feels odd to me. I'll go on record.
It feels odd to me too. My reasoning actually is a little bit more because I spend a lot of time thinking about blues is that the it seems to me if I'm going to hold a conversation with somebody, with you, mm-hmm. and I say the same things that everybody who we know has already said, why do you want to listen to me? Like if I were holding a conversation with you and I was just regurgitating Foucault or Goethe and spitting back all these philosophers, Zeno, you know, like, you know, I love Zeno, by the way. If you're a Stoic, you're a follower of the philosophies of Zeno.
Now, I'm back.
Right. But if the point is if I were just regurgitating all this, it just becomes really uninteresting. But in music, it actually seems we've devolved to a point where stylistically, like if you're a blues player, you have to regurgitate the licks and the sound and the phrasing of these guys who've already said this shit a million times.
In order for it to be considered the proper language. I see your point.
Zen Blues Quartet was Mike Finnegan, who's probably one of the greatest B3 players and blues singers on the planet today. Yeah. I mean, I'm not, you know, that lineage and his ability are inarguable. Steve Ferroni, who played with Freddie King and George Harrison and, you know, all these, an Average White Band and all these other projects and has got a pedigree of history with, like, you know, music. Great players we couldn't get looked at because our approach to doing things was we didn't want to play 1-4-5 all night. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to play like we were old guys from the South. And we didn't want to play harmonically or melodically when we improvised, like something that somebody's already said, mm-hmm. you know, and so we weren't considered blues guys. I mean, we just weren't considered. For me, anybody looking at Mike Finnegan and saying, you're not a blues musician is insane.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's just insane to me.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I used to play in a band with Randy Jacobs called the Bone Shakers. And we would do some festival shows and these blues festivals and the problem that band had is that it was a powerhouse of a band, and live it was just an insane experience. But we weren't a traditional blues band. You know, Randy came from a very blues based place, and his style that he played. But he was also very unique. He also had a really solid, you know, funk and R&B background and rock background as well. But we weren't a traditional, you know, like we weren't doing the 12 bars, you know, and at these blues festivals, that's what, you know, it's like, oh man, these guys are great. These guys are for real. And you hear
that sentence for real.
Yeah. And they're just doing the, you know, when we were,
that sounds like the Odd Couple, by the way. I just want you to know that.
Yeah. Kind of does.
This sounded like the Odd Couple.
And so that's, I get what you're saying. Is it stagnant? Is the blues stagnant?
Yeah, but it's not just stagnant. It's like, it's almost fascist purism. If you go and on any discussion board where people are talking about blues, and then there's also the contradictions, like Bonamassa. I mean, we've said this before. Bonamassa is considered considered also one of the leading edge blues guys. Yeah. And I don't, he's cloning Eric Johnson in a blues context. And I like the way he plays. I think he's a really talented musician. I think he's a really nice guy. I've met him once. He was very, very polite, very professional. He's an extremely good showman. He puts on a good show for people. Mm-hmm. He's a great guitar player. But you know, if that's blues, then I don't get the demarcation point. Because when you look at the blues cruise, you know, Mike Finnegan does go out on a blues cruise, but he goes out with, you know, the band that he played with Taj Mahal, the Phantom Blues Band. And those guys are traditionalists. They play pretty much traditional arrangements with traditional sounding and playing and improvisation and stylistically within that framework. You know, a lot of the guys on, I think it's Alligator Records and all those stuff. And I look at this and I go, okay, well, it doesn't feel vital to me. Like, it just doesn't feel like when blues first came out, it was a vital, inspiring connectivity between the church and the secular practice, you know, the secular musicians, Robert Johnson.
Well, it was part of a movement, you know. It was born out of field chants, you know.
Yeah.
And slavery, and it was protest music in effect.
Early guitar stuff. Yeah. You know, the early guitar stuff.
But now I'll play devil's advocate for a second. So take a guy like, you know, what if Joe Bonamassa or even John Mayer, what if these guys are actually taking the preset norms and boundaries of what's acceptable traditional blues, and they're saying, okay, I understand all that and I get all that and I'm down with it, but what about taking it and moving it forward? What if these guys are the future of the blues?
Okay. You know, I mean, there's a huge adulation. If you look at, like, you know, again, the forums, I mean, I can only refer to the forums. You look at, like, the Robin Ford, John Mayer, Joe Bonamassa thing, aside from the gear, the guitars, and the tone quest with these guys, you know, these guys are setting the standard. The problem I have with that is, how can you set a standard based on something somebody else created?
Yeah.
Now, Robin Ford doesn't fall into that. Robin Ford has his own thing. Robin Ford is his own sort of thing. But John Mayer is essentially playing, I mean, as good as he is, and I don't take anything away from John Mayer's playing, his showmanship, his songwriting skills, any of that stuff, his tone, but he's essentially playing Stevie Ray and B.B. King, as far as I can tell.
But
what, how is that the future?
But what modern day blues player isn't?
I think Kirk has his own thing.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Kirk has his own thing. I think Scott Henderson, for sure, has his own blues approach.
But again, he's the farthest thing from a traditionalist.
But that's what you said. You asked me what's the future.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, if I were saying where is the blues not stagnant, I thought that like when Scott Henderson left Tribal Tech to do his blues thing, right? I thought that was the most exciting thing I'd seen in the blues community. Mm-hmm. I thought
but would that be accepted? Absolutely not. Scott Henderson as a blues guy in the mainstream blues community.
No. And see, this is the thing, you know, like a friend of mine and I were talking recently about something we were talking about called spiritual fascism. Spiritual fascism is when people are so certain that their idea is the real deal that it closes the conversation down. Mm-hmm. When you talk about musical purism, purity and like, that's the real deal. That concept to me shuts the door. It shuts the door up. It's fascist. It's like, this is it, and anything else that's not this isn't it. But that's not true, because if you go back and look at the history of the blues, there's a plethora. Is Elvis blues? I mean, that's a really important question. Is Elvis a blues musician?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I think he is.
I suppose there's, I mean, he was certainly doing a lot of his tunes.
Look at his historical pedigree. Look at where he's from.
Yeah.
Look at where he's from in the South.
Right.
Look at his history with the church and gospel music.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at the history of these guys coming up, Robert Johnson to Albert Collins. What's the relationship? Because there's not a lot of correlation between the two, except for maybe some of the framework of the music, but the stylistic differential between Robert Johnson's guitar playing and Albert Collins with a telly and a capo through a twin with everything on 10.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of correlation. There's an evolution.
Yeah.
That's a logical step by step, but there's a next evolution of where the blues is going to go to.
Yeah. Pete Townsend, he sung about having a divine right to the blues. And I always thought that was a great lyric and a great line, because it really brings up the question of who is entitled to the blues. Like, you know, and that's the thing, that like, I never really felt like I was entitled to call myself like a blues player. I just in the same way, I never really feel like I'm not entitled to call myself a jazz player, you know, because I wasn't born into it. I didn't come up you know, like listening to Charlie Parker and Coltrane. It's right. Like, I got into that stuff later.
Right.
You know, after I'd been playing for several years, I got it. I sort of like, you know, sort of by osmosis got into it. Studied it a lot, got way deep into it, and spent a lot of time, you know, studying it and really picking it apart and trying my hardest to be able to play it on some level to where it didn't absolutely suck, you know, maybe just marginally suck.
Right.
But it's just like that same way. It's like, I feel like I wasn't born in the right place. Mm-hmm. I didn't start off listening to the right stuff in order to, you know, I haven't learned enough about the history of it. And by history, I primarily mean like all of the players, you know, all of the players that no one's ever heard of that, right. You know, just lived in little.
Do you think that's necessary?
I don't know. I've always felt like in order for someone to really call themselves like a master of something, that's kind of what they need to do. They really need to go back and sort of be, you know, they need to know every aspect of it. You know, I think that I can, like I did a gig last night with, I sat in with your band here in Bangor, Maine. And you know, you guys were doing blues tunes. I was playing the blues, but it's like, I feel like.
You were playing your version. And what I liked about it was, you know, first of all, if you know, I'll be devil's advocate here. You were playing blues in the beginning, and then you'd go into Jamie Land, which I like. I like Jamie Land. I would, because you do all this amazing stuff that's just so. I'm just like, I'm like looking over, my jaw keeps dropping, and I'm like, and you were playing a really challenging instrument through a little amp and then one pedal, and sounding like a, you know, guitar god, and it was really nice. It was a great experience. But if we were being honest, you know, you and I were both approaching what we were doing as improvisers and as soloists, and within that, we'd set up the framework, and then we would go where we want to go.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when I play, you know, a blues lick or a blues line or something like that, it's I'm coming, like you can trace what I'm playing right back to like a Freddie King record, because that's probably where I got it, or off of a BB King record, off of, you know, like what's the Live at the Regal, you know, or off of a Buddy Guy, you know, record. Like those are like the three, you know, main things that I've really, like, I love Freddie King.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one, he's like my favorite. He's like the top of the heap for me. I love like the late 50s, you know, Buddy Guy stuff. Mm-hmm. Just amazing. And then of course, you know, BB King, Live at the Regal.
So everybody does.
Everyone, it's like textbook, you know. It's like the kind
but
of
we don't play that. Blues. But we don't play that.
I don't, but it's like, but those are kind of like, the things that I'll play, that's kind of where I got them. They don't come from like years of toil and sweat. And, you know, they just come from like, you know, okay, here's a guy around his, you know, I don't want to say CD player because I actually learned him off the records. You know?
Yeah.
But that's where I got him. And that's, you know, because I thought, and I came to that stuff as a result of listening to Led Zeppelin and Hendrix and all the things that I listened to when I was younger. And it's like, and then it's like, okay, well, wait, where did they? And then I would hear them in interviews and see in interviews, they would talk about this stuff. And then I was like, okay, maybe I should check out some of this stuff.
Right.
You know, and that's about where it ended. There's a few other ancillary things that I would get into, you know, that I would check out and get into, you know, like Lightning Hopkins and,
right.
And you know, Sun House and things like that. But, you know, that doesn't even scratch the surface. And again, I keep going back to Kirk Fletcher, but, you know, a guy like Kirk Fletcher, or there's another, like, you know, modern West Coast guy like Kid Ramos or something like that, who, you know, they'd be able to, like, dig way, way, way back, you know.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's, I started with a real fascination for Robert Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
I started at, you know, 11 years old listening to Robert Johnson, and then I got really into Yarmo Kakona for a while because I thought he was really cool, the Hot Tuna thing, mm-hmm. and like the electric blues. And when I was 12 years old, I actually was visiting California, and I was at McCabe's, and I actually accidentally jammed with Mike Bloomfield, like in McCabe's.
Accidentally?
Yeah, no, I didn't know who he was. Yeah. We were sitting in, and he was playing, and he was showing me some stuff, and he walked away, and the guy came up to me and said, "Do you know who that was?" And I was just as clueless then as I am now.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like I've always played blues. Like the first band I was in was 13 was the Grin and Barrett Blues Band. Mm-hmm. G-R-Y-N-N-E and B-A-R-R-I-T, Grin and Barrett Blues Band. And that was what I did. And my first real concert I did, we were like doing Whipping Post and that kind of, you know, the Allman Brothers stuff. And I've played blues my whole life. I've never really thought of myself mm-hmm. as a blues musician. I've never really, I mean, but I like that vernacular because there's something in me that resonates with that emotional storytelling. Yeah. And, you know, I used to open for Albert Collins in New York at a place called Tramps, and I really loved playing with him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know, my sense of music has always been founded in that because there's something about that vernacular that really resonates for me. And you know me, I like Oscar Peterson like crazy, and I like Holdsworth, and I like Henderson, and I like all these people. But if I have a chance to play something, the place I can go to where it requires the least amount of mental, you know, agita, that's Italian for something, is I can go to play blues. It's like very organic for me. I can just do it.
If you wanted to start a blues band, if you were like a musician, it's like, I want to start a blues band. If you were a younger musician, like someone just kind of like coming up, and it's like, I'm going to put a band together. I'm really into the blues. I like the blues. But I don't really have a super deep background in it. I've listened to, you know, like he was a third or fourth generation blues guy. He's listened to Stevie Ray Vaughan. He's listened to, you know, maybe some Johnny Winter and, you know, like that. That's his blues education, you know, it's like that type of stuff. And he's like, I'm going to put a blues band together and I'm going to go on the blues circuit and start playing. Do you think that someone like that would be accepted or welcomed with open arms?
It would depend. I mean, it's like I would look at somebody and I would say, well, where is your orientation? Like, I like the storytellers. So for me, like, I like the Jimmy Reeds, Freddie Kings, and Mose Allisons. Mm-hmm. I like what there's a lyric content. I like the Etta Jameses, and I like the people whose music, like Albert Collins, who is this incredible performer and storyteller, mm-hmm. you know, and BB, who's this great performer and storyteller. And mm-hmm. and it wasn't so much about being a gunslinger at that point. You know, the gunslinger is a new modality. You know, it's like there was a... You know, I'm going to tell my story. And part of my story is I'm a guitar player. Or part of my story is I'm a lyricist and a singer. And mm-hmm. you know, part of my story is those things. But I would say, you know, where are you oriented within the thing? And then what do you want to do? Do you want to be a traditionalist? Mm-hmm. Do you want to be a semi-traditionalist? Do you want to be a regurgitator, which is what I describe the sort of younger generation guys as regurgitators? And, you know, I'm guilty of my own stuff. And also, you know, my own thing is that I don't want to shut the ideologue down. I don't want to shut the conversation down. I play the way I play. Yeah. I don't want to sound like anybody else. It's funny. If you go to the guys who everybody imitates, they didn't want to sound like anybody else. Like right. Stevie Ray Vaughan's brother used to say that Stevie couldn't play the same thing once. Mm-hmm. You know, I love that concept.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like Robin Ford sure didn't start out saying, I want to sound like Binkity Bonk. Yeah. You know, he played the way he plays.
It could even be said that Jimmy Vaughan was more of a traditionalist,
absolutely.
More of a traditional blues player,
absolutely,
than Stevie Ray was. And I have a book, you know, it's like a, you know, biography or something of, and it would tell about the fights that Jimmy Vaughan and Stevie Ray Vaughan would get into, because Jimmy Vaughan would criticize him and tell him, "Oh, you sound like Robin Trower, you know, you're not playing the blues, you sound like Robin Trower," you know, whereas Jimmy Vaughan was playing, you know, just really, really straight up traditional,
yep.
and obviously didn't have the fame.
Well, but you also have the virtuosity aspect of Stevie. I mean, what he was doing, and he was taking a lot of what Hendrix did and taking it another step forward.
Yeah. He was also a front man and he was singing and he had,
a lot of charisma.
Yeah. But, his style, you know, his, I have this term I like to use, his musical footprint was enormous,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think more so than maybe Jimmy Vaughan's, you know, but I think that was maybe by design. Jimmy Vaughan was staying within this
yep.
very, you know, tightly defined framework of what defines traditional.
Well, music. Stevie lucked out, actually. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, Stevie lucked out in that somehow he broke through and was seen on the other side as still being acceptable within the blues community and doing something new.
Yeah.
You know, normally that's not really the case.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get an Oz Noy or a Scott Henderson or a Wayne Krantz as the new blues.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, he's the latest blues man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think that that's what they want anyways, necessarily.
But the question I would ask is, why do people want it all to stay the same? That's really the question I'd like to ask people in the audience, is why is it necessary to stay safe and to keep it all the same? And where are the storytellers? Why isn't there a modern-day Mose Allison? there's still stories to tell that have humor and power and grace. Moses is an incredible storyteller. Yeah. Jimmy Reed is an incredible storyteller. Where are those people now?
Yeah, I mean, everyone in every genre gets, you know, Dylan, you know, when he went electric, just was criticized horribly, you know, and booed off the stage and all this kind of stuff. And then Miles was criticized because he was constantly moving forward and just wanted to move jazz forward.
Why is the status quo? So that's a question we're going to ask. Why is the status quo so important? Why is it important to be safe within the context of creating a style, saying what the style is, and this doesn't have to just be blues. It could be any style. Why is it important to define ourselves by the vernacular or the style that we speak and then relegate ourselves to being in that only? Like Scott Henderson, we really like because he crosses all of these bridges. He crosses jazz and funk and country and rock and blues and fusion, and he's comfortable and original and beautiful in all of those. And I don't know, I think music, when you start to shut down the conversation, that music loses interest for me. I'm not that interested in it anymore.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to hear who are some of your favorite players, listeners, who are some of your favorite players that you feel still retain the spirit of whatever genre it is that they're playing, but they still, they
explore.
Yeah, they explore, they blaze new trails without bastardizing and or diluting the style that they're playing in.
So let us know. And don't forget to go out to iTunes, Guitar Talk with John and Jamie, leave some reviews, or subscribe to the podcast and the blog at guitartalkpodcast.com, or like us on Facebook with Guitar Talk with John and Jamie. And, you know, let us know and post some stuff. We're really, really interested in developing the conversation about what you guys think, you know, guitar is really about and what's important. And the conversation, we'll never shut down the conversation because you don't agree with us. In fact, we're assuming pretty much from the get-go that too many people are going to agree with us, you know, regularly. So with that said, we're going to feel all tore down. In a chromatic way. We're gonna feel tore down, and I know we're supposed to go with a tore down. So we're tore down, and we're leaving you with this winter blues. It's Guitar Talk with John and Jamie. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you.
And now we're gonna let Jamie play us out with a little chromatic tore down. I like the way you just find the way to go the farthest place out. It's awesome. Wouldn't it be awesome if somebody could actually sing tore down over that?
See, would this be accepted in the blues community? Could I do this and get a gig at Biscuits and Blues in San Francisco?
Doubtful. But I'll tell you what. If anybody can sing, take this lick, and sing tore down over the harmonic change, we'll bring you on the show. All right. Thanks a lot for being here. Am I fading?
Yes.
I'm fading out of this?
Yeah.
When should I fade? It sounds like Dragnet at this point.
I've got to change it. We'll get sued.